And we're back. Welcome back to another Practice Makes Perfect podcast. Your host here, Monster Defay, is bringing you guys another episode. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to the audio version of this podcast. As always, thank you for downloading, checking us out, whether it's Amazon, Spotify, Dash Radio, all the different places. We appreciate you guys supporting the podcast. We are continuing the trend of doing something new here on the podcast this year. And we have a special guest. I'm sure you have already read from the title. But before we, of course, jump into the mix, want to say that there is a video version of the podcast being worked on here as well. So as we continue to develop what that's going to look like and where that content's going to live, I encourage you guys to go check out the Practice Server Twitter channel so you can see where this stuff's being uploaded. But ultimately, thank you. Let's jump into who we have here today. So introducing one of my good friends that I have had the pleasure to work alongside throughout the years. He's got nearing now a decade worth of experience in not only gaming as a professional player, as a content creator, but a professional commentator as well. Someone that I truly appreciate is my boy Takata. So Takata, what's up, bro?
What's up, Monster? That's an intro and a half. I mean, decade, maybe going a little overboard there. 6 years, but it's close enough. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, 6 years is no joke in esports. We all know that the volatility of the landscape exists, and to survive even past your first year or two, let alone make a decision at some point or another to go full time and continue to be here, is no easy feat. And that's why I'm really excited to allow the listeners to hear about your journey, your experience, and where those pivotal moments happened. But before we get to, of course, the story of Takata, I want to thank John Rush, who is, of course, producing today's episode. What's up, bro?
What's up, everybody? Takata, we're so glad to have you, for real.
Thank you. You know, it's great to be here. Like Monster said, we've been peers in the space, friends now, for such a long time. It's like, I think back on it as well, and it's like, you know, if you think of like maybe like a high school or a college or even your start, and it could be the work field, you know, it's like kind of like four-year frames, right? It's like four-year blocks, and it's like, dang, I've basically been like almost working with Monster also for like one of those four-year blocks, even longer now, you know, 6 years. So it's like they're significant parts of my life at this point, and it's kind of just kind of crazy to think about. I just like reflected on it the other day. I was like, wow, it's crazy.
How old are you, Takata?
I turned 23 in less than a month.
Look at that.
I'm 22, yeah.
Look at that. So I've basically been a part of your life almost 20 to 25% of your time here on Earth. And if you don't count the baby years, basically a third of your life. It is significant.
That's crazy.
Undoubtedly. That's the way I like to think of this kind of stuff. When I was just a quick tangent talking to my wife, and I'm like, damn, babe, like we are actually like 8-9 years, right? Like I was like, that's a third of my life. We are like, have already, you know, been together and now married, etc. It's incredible how significant our early adulthood years just add up. And, you know, again, how one day we're going to look back and reflect like these are our most youthful times. And we're doing incredible things, yourself included. You're obviously on this incredible journey through gaming and being a content creator. You now live in Texas. I know a lot about you. The users and the listeners at home probably don't. So let's start wherever you want to pick up your journey, man, because I'm curious to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you just like a quick summary of where I am today so we can give you back up to date, and then I'll kind of get into how it started and how it began. So yeah, I have 6 years of experience building my brand as a bilingual content creator, professional esports player, and on-camera broadcast talent. I have over 1 million followers on various social medias, 77 million views, and raised close to $100,000 for various charities. Now, as you heard, bilingual is kind of one of the big parts of it. And that's because I actually grew up, not in the US, but I grew up in Spain. So growing up, I actually had to go through over like 7 different schools because I was constantly moving between Spain. My mom's also Irish, so I lived in Ireland for a while. And then also, obviously, the US. Now, I've been in the gaming realm, the esports realm, for a long time now, whether it be the first esports tournaments back way back COD days, League days, like since the start. But professionally, I say 6 years because that's when I've been doing it kind of a bit more full time. Now I've had Twitch since 2012. Back in the days, I'd stream like Arma 2, like DayZ mod, or maybe like some random Call of Duty. I'd do like Ninja Diffuses, like you know how it was back in those days. And then when I got closer to the end of my high school, career, I was playing Overwatch, actually. This was before Fortnite. I was playing Overwatch, and I was pretty good at Overwatch. I got, like, top 13 on the leaderboard, I think, was my peak. But I was so young, I didn't understand kind of how scrims worked and how you kind of got into, like, tier 2 teams and all of that in practice. And I never really capitalized on that situation. But then Fortnite came out, and I was like, ooh, this game's pretty sick, you know? Fortnite's kind of nice. I kind of like this game. And when Fortnite came out, I also started getting pretty good at it. And at the same time, since I'd always been kind of making content for fun and doing it on the side, I was, you know, still making some videos. And I think it was when World Cup qualifiers came along. I got first place in week one semifinals on NA West. And then that kind of boosted my momentum a little bit. And it caused me to get a bit more known in the North American community, as well as the Spanish-speaking community, because I was also making Spanish content at the time alongside my English content. So with that boost, you know, kind of opportunities started to go in. I got signed to my first org. I started doing the content kind of more as like a full-time thing. And then those were also during my last 2 years of high school, but I was also taking college courses at the same time, and I was doing internships. So I had like five different things going on at the same time. But it eventually led to me kind of pursuing the esports gaming individual brand creator route and getting to where I am today.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions starting to spring out from this. But for starters, I want to share with the listeners a quick story. One time, Takata and I were traveling in from the States, and at this point, we were going back and forth to Copenhagen so regularly. I think the port authorities thought we were like drug smugglers because we get stopped and they're looking at our passports. And they're like, dude, why are you guys coming in and out of our country this frequently? And what are you doing? And we were standing right next to each other and I get flagged. I'm like, yo, this dude, like, he's doing the same thing. And then like,
this guy?
They're like, who's that guy? Because we were at two different gates. So long story short, luckily I had paperwork. Takata had paperwork to kind of back me up, because I think they were just going to send me back because I'm a little more brown than Takata. So that's kind of what happened. Yeah, you know, Takata's Irish side was really saving him at the gate, but my brown skin was not working. Let's get into the point where you got signed as CLG. I had no idea that you were in high school when you got signed as a professional player. And to me, that's an astounding opportunity for someone who's in high school to generate, like, I would assume some real passive revenue at that point, really solidify yourself. But more importantly, I think that's so relatable, probably to a lot of listeners, to professional players around the world that might find themselves in that spot. We see today, Takata, you see it firsthand, how many, like, youthful esports athletes, right? We could call them professional gamers, pop off, and they start making money while in high school. What did you learn from that? What was that like? Was it scary making money? Was it exciting? Did you like think I gotta quit school? Like, what was going through your mind as a kid essentially at that point?
That's a super good question, because obviously, you know, I'm super fortunate to have had that opportunity and been in that position to make a lot of kind of money early on, but it also comes with a lot of I don't know if I want to call them challenges, difficulties. I mean, you have to make a lot of decisions at that point, right? I was kind of lucky where it was like my junior, senior year of high school when I started like kind of growing and doing my content. And it was my senior year when I got my initial contract from CLG. And obviously, you kind of have to make that decision. You're like, oh, that's quite a lot of money. It's like a year-long contract. You're getting salaried. It's like basically a job, right, for creating content, competing. But at the same time, you're like, what do I do in terms of like education? I just finished high school. Do I take a gap year? Do I do some college courses? And I was making quite a lot during that time with the CLG contract and the content and everything. But I still decided to continue. So I was in this running start program. It was called in high school. You could kind of take college classes while you're in your last 2 years of high school. And I was doing them online. So I'd have enough time to also do the content and I wouldn't have to go to the college. I could just do it online. Yeah. So I kept doing those for a year when I kind of got the CLG contract as a kind of like backup plan to just kind of see how things roll out. But after it continued going well and my socials continued growing and I got a renewal of my contract. I was like, all right, it's time to kind of, you know, like now's the time. Like I'd been making like more than six figures with my contracts and everything. And I was like literally just out of high school. So I was like, you know what? This is the time I can, you know, go back to continuing my college courses after. But what I'm trying to get at is it wasn't like a very easy decision. I wasn't like, you know, I'm making a bit of money. I'm just going to drop everything and go all in. I wanted to kind of ease my way into it, continue with it for a little bit, try both. And then by that time, I was like kind of confident enough that I could make it into something official. Then I kind of stopped taking my college courses, took that gap year. But now that gap year has turned into 5 years that I've been doing this full time, and I've kind of kept the boat running. But it was definitely like a pretty difficult decision.
So not to take away from the narrative, Monster will keep us there, but I have to know, and if this would actually help some of our listeners, six figures right out of high school, top three dumb purchases. You know, like what's the, is it a Louis bag? Like what, we've all been there, bro. Like you get the first check on something. Like, did you have any of those?
I'm about to give you the most boring answer you've probably ever heard in this, in this situation before from a high school kid. Cause my friend's like, dude, buy a Supra. Okay. Yeah. Like, dude, go get this. I've been pretty frugal my whole life. I've never really like spent a lot. Obviously, you know, I like clothes and I'll do things every now and then, but like, especially when I was younger, I've been quite frugal. So literally what I did with my money, we can get into this later, but you know, I'm in Austin, Texas now. When I was doing all this, I was in Seattle. And I kind of started researching a lot about finances and, you know, what to do with money instead of just spending it. I kind of like started watching videos, talking to people and seeing, you know, like, what should I do with this, you know, money I'm getting, I don't really know what to do. And it kind of led to me, well, one, I maxed out my Roth IRA for the 3 years I could do it. I had my 401k match with my employer, which was CLG at the time. And then I was saving up in a HSA account, so like a high interest savings account for a mortgage that I wanted to get a property later when I had enough. And I also moved out at the same time. So I was living with my parents in high school, but then when I started getting enough money to live alone, I went to an apartment, which might not have been the best idea, but you can take the pros and cons because it was a lot more expensive. You know, it's, you know, if you're living with your parents still, I kind of would say just like keep doing that, you know, make your money, save it. Cause I was like spending a bunch of money on rent, but at the same time, you kind of get that life experience of living alone and not being with your parents. So it has those benefits. And I'm kind of happy I did that. Not really the monetary aspect, but yeah,
this is smart.
I took it kind of safe.
Take notes,
and then,
people.
that was like the most boring answer, but I kind of did like, I put a lot of research into finances and kind of what to do with money. And then I opened up also, like I invested in index funds, mainly S&P 500, US total, and a bit of international market. So I kind of like got into all like the investing, saving and that. And I'd never even like kind of bought anything. Like I have a Subaru right now for my car, but I was just using my mom's Prius before I moved here to Austin. And then I was able to finally kind of get my house here, which is like my big mortgage. And now after, you know, I have my house, I've had my investments, I've had my things. Now I'm actually kind of thinking, you know, I kind of want like a more sporty car or something. I kind of want like a nice car instead of my like daily. So I'm thinking, I'm looking around right now, I'm hunting, but now after I kind of wanted to get my bases down before making any crazy purchases. But I guess I have a couple watches, not like Rolexes, maybe like a couple $100s, but you know, I've got my things.
Love that.
But yeah.
So, I mean, I don't consider that a boring answer at all. I'm like envious. Like you did it right. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Meanwhile, I bought like a Versace chain and a pair of $400 pair of jeans. I didn't know what I was doing. My first job money. My parents were livid.
They were not happy.
It was not a good thing at all. So I think you definitely gave us a lot to think about when it comes down to you being a young man, a teenager, just coming out, really just being in the thick of it, and then getting approached and making a true full-time salary. What happens after that? You come out of high school. Well, first I wanted to ask you, what would be your recommendation for someone who's in that position? Do you regret, or did you think that, you know, pursuing even your college credits and your career, like, was that all worth it to you? Would it have been easier if you just like fully focused in on one thing or another? Did that come with its, I'm sure everything comes with its downsides, but were the upsides to you really trying to run yourself thin? Because that's really what you're doing in that moment to be, you know, protective of your future. Did you find that to be worth it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think how to answer this question. So the way I see it is you have a lot of time in a day. And if you really want something, you can put in the work to kind of make it happen. Like, let me give you some examples. So when I was in my last year of high school, like I said, I had my finals. I was doing my final exams. I had an internship at a film production company, and it was like a pretty hefty internship. We did a lot of work with like Microsoft, Expedia, Starbucks, and Verizon, I believe. And then I was also in the World Cup qualifiers. So I was competing in the World Cup quals, and I was running my YouTube channel, posting a video once every 2 days, editing the video, making the thumbnail myself. And I was doing it all at the same time. And that was definitely like a work overload. And it was also something that I would have liked to do differently if I were to look back at it. But to be fair, I did it. Like I got it done. I did it. And then it made me think also, you know, those times, I mean, like middle school or high school where it's summer, you know, and then you like wake up and it's like 3 p.m. You like watch a show. It's like 6 p.m. You like eat something. It's 10 p.m. And you're like, where did the day go? Like, I didn't have any time. I didn't have time to do anything. But at the same time, when you're kind of like doing all these things at once, the qualifiers, the internship and this, you kind of make, you have to be efficient. You have to be productive or you're not going to be able to get everything done. But it is possible. So my kind of conclusion of this question is, I think if you're in a position like this, where you want to kind of do something that you like, whether it be gaming, whether it be esports or anything, but also you have those kind of like general education, general kind of, I don't want to say more normal routes, but more traditional routes in a sense. I think you should definitely have backup plans. And I think you do have time to do both if you want it enough. Like, you can find ways to do it. I didn't go to the college classes. I took them online. So I'd do all of it online in the times I had free. Like, you can make it happen. It's not easy. It's difficult, but it's definitely doable. And I think you should have backup plans, you know, to fall back on if things don't work out. Even if like you want to get into, let's say, like TikTok ads or making videos, like you can do that with a 9-to-5, but it's going to be instead of your free time where you're watching the new episode of Solo Leveling that comes out every Saturday or something, and you're gonna be grinding, right? You're gonna be editing, you're gonna be doing work, and it's really difficult, but it's definitely possible. And I think it's the better decision, because if you don't have that many things on your plate, I think you can get lazy and your efficiency and productivity won't be as maximized as if you have very few things on your plate. You'll get a little too comfortable.
Yeah, I can outright say that that's 100% true. And I think what you're showing is a lot of the same characteristics that I had when I had to make those decisions as well. Like, being able to find your own self-motivation, it can be difficult, it can be hard. But like you said, if you really, really look at all the hours in the day and how much time is spent doing non-productive things, there's a lot of room that you could get productivity out of an hour, out of 30 minutes, out of 2 hours, if you just focus in on that one thing. In 2012, I also had that decision. I just, you know, had a part-time job, had to make a living. I was a full-time college student. I was pursuing full-time, gaming as well as a potential career outlet. And it wasn't easy. And I had a girlfriend, dude, and I had to keep her happy, right? Imagine.
That's expensive.
And I'm streaming for 4 hours. Yeah, that doesn't work, guys. It just won't, trust. But my point is, I don't regret either, because I ended up getting a associate's degree in criminal justice. And I only, crazy, another ridiculous story, I only just redeemed that 10 years later, because I had to go to Copenhagen. They were like, oh yeah, get us all your, school credentials, like what's your highest education, yada, yada, to prove for my work visa. And I was like, oh yeah, I literally graduated college, didn't attend the ceremony, didn't go pick up the diploma. Like, I didn't care about the vanity titles. I did that for me, one. And two, I had to go home to stream, bro. Like, I'm trying to, you know what I mean? I'm hustling. Yeah, so once that was done, I was like, peace. And I never went to pick it up. And I have the diploma literally in the dresser right here next to me, all because I needed it for a work visa. That's so
funny.
That's the reason I went to go get it, for more work, by the way.
Well, yeah, it makes me think of just people who a lot of times they're hoping for the opportunity without asking the question, are they actually ready to do the work that opportunity requires? And I think we've seen that, you know, people get a first look, they get to get on a roster, they get signed, even maybe they get initial opportunities, and then they flake out, because I think people can spend more time trying to get the opportunity than measuring the cost of what it takes to like sustain that. So it's like, what we're just like, I mean, bring us into just a real human moment with that though. It's like, you know, you're a real guy. You're not Superman. Were there times where, what was the tension? Was it that you were physically and mentally tired at times? Was it that you felt lonely? Like what were maybe some of the kind of decision points that maybe other people would have backed away from?
Oh yeah, I got three things I want to talk about in this question you just asked. But the first one, I guess I'll directly answer that. So when I was in the senior year of high school and I was doing the internship World Cup and all that stuff we just talked about previously, I actually had like a panic, like a stress attack. So I was like, it's possible, but also you don't want to overwork yourself. I actually like basically almost like collapsed. Like I like fell down, and then I was like, whoa, what just happened? And I went to the doctors, and they basically said, yeah, it was kind of like, you're too stressed, bro. Like, like calm down. So then I kind of from then figured out how to, I mean, this is another thing to kind of get into, but I stopped doing as many things myself, and I kind of expanded a bit more on, in terms of efficiency in that sense. Now we can get into that in a bit, but the other thing I also wanted to answer what you said about, like, I think it's really important, especially for people who do get these opportunities. And it's, you know, when you like kind of get signed to an org for the first time, like we said, you're probably going to get like a pretty decent salary, but you also have to be, you know, ready to put in the work that it comes with. And, you know, I know there's a lot of jokes, you know, like, yeah, Twitch streamer, not a real job, you know, pro player, not a real job. Like it's pretty serious when you're competing at the highest level in anything in the world, and even gaming. When I was on CLG, we had nutritionists, we had coach, we had physical therapists. And when, you know, you had to do everything to maximize your efficiency as a player, to train, to practice, to make sure you're scrimming, to make sure you're reviewing, to make sure you're doing everything to be the best version of yourself you possibly can. And it also takes a lot of hours. But what I see time in and like repeat itself over and over again is, you know, those players will get their salary and they'll make a bunch of money and they'll be like, okay, I'm already signed, I'm already playing. And they'll get too comfortable. Like they'll just not really practice that much, or just kind of get a little too comfortable, and maybe just, you know, accept the paycheck that comes every month by being on the org. And it's kind of what gets the best of them. So I think it is kind of important to, you know, stay focused and kind of continue with that.
Yeah, that's a recurring theme everywhere, right? We see pros, I call it just team hopping. There's a reason some of those contracts don't, you know, happen again. And most of the time, believe it or not, it's not the professional player turning it down. It's more often the team is like, yeah, we're not renewing you. You can go make your tweet and good luck, buddy. Right. And it's because that complacency, they sit there and you get on a team and then you stop making videos for whatever reason, or you stop potentially looking to invest in yourself and your team. You know, I love that you mentioned efficiency is one of the best ways to get you out of that mental rut or support yourself. People, I think, grossly underestimate, like, dude, just having a $1,000 or $2,000 monthly budget to allocate and like really allocate it into expanding your team and having a strong team around you to ease up the pressures of socials or, you know, gathering clips or coming up with content ideas, whatever the case may be. There's so many ways to really automate some of the stressors that come with being a live streamer. You can handle and take in all those responsibilities for, you know, years on end. But I think there will come a time where you'll realize that, man, if you just built a super dope team and you just gave up a little bit, you can gain so much more, not only in growth, but in terms of, you know, mental ease, right? And really expanding. So you've been doing it for 6 years. At what point in that 6 years did you transition out of specifically focusing in as a professional player and getting to the other side? Is I do want to touch on some of your professional commentary and kind of, you know, the hurdles of that journey, because, you know, you and I both know you're a beast at that too now. So
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm trying to think back. So I was on CLG for a little over 3 years. I started off as strictly a competitive player. And I believe after, so it was 2018, 2019, where I was like full on competitive, which was like the skirmish days, the World Cup days. But at the same time, as a pro player, I was making content. And I kind of felt like content creation was a little bit more long-term and stable than pro play. So after, I would say, about a year and a half on CLG, I kind of talked to them and said I wanted to focus a bit more on content creation. So I would say I was competing probably like a year before getting signed and then a year and a half while being signed. So probably 2.5 years. But I was also doing the last like year of that, also doing content full-time at the same time. So it kind of affected a bit how much I was putting into the actual competitive play. But then I made the decision to kind of just like basically focus 90% on content and the rest on competitive, as some of the content was based around competitive as well. And then from there, I continued with content creation also in the Fortnite realm. But I started adding a bit of vlogs because a lot of events you might have to travel to or even sponsorships. So I'd kind of try and make a bit more of that IRL personable kind of vlog content, which isn't just based on the fact that I'm good at playing Fortnite. And then I also would do viewing parties on my Twitch streams. And that's kind of where my commentary career started, because it was actually a DreamHack employee reached out to me after seeing me do a viewing party in Spanish. And they're like, hey, there's like a Spanish Fortnite event that's coming up. Do you want to like, you want to cast it? And then I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, casting in Spanish. I've never casted before. That's going to be interesting. And then my initial thought was no. But I'm very fortunate to have had, like, my dad has always really pressured me to kind of say yes to opportunities, like always at least try it, just do it. You know, like you never know what can come from it. Like just say yes. And even though it's not like I would be making a bunch of money from the commentary, like I would have made more just doing the viewing party, I was like, you know what? I'll just do it because I want to do it. I want to try it out. I'll see what it's like. Casting sounds pretty cool. So, you know, pretty fun opportunity. So then I casted that first event in Spanish. And I thought it was pretty cool, but I also like wasn't as good at it as I wanted to be. And it kind of like opened up this new, like, I want to do better. You know, I want to practice a bit more. I was like, let me put me out again. So I did it again in Spanish and I did it again. And eventually they were like, oh, we're going to do like an English broadcast. Do you want to do that? You speak English too, right? I was like, okay, yeah, I'll try that. So then I started casting in English and I was like, oh, this is pretty sick too. I'll do it in English. And then Epic Games reached out and they're like, hey, we're going to do like a official Fortnite ES Spanish broadcast for FNCS. Do you want to like do it? And I was like, oh, you know, okay. Like, yeah, we saw you doing these little events. I was like, yeah, you know, yeah, yes, yes. Heck, always say yes. So I was like, yeah. So I did that. And I did the Spanish one for a while. And then eventually they like, hey, you know, you speak English too, right? Do you want to go on the official like English Fortnite broadcast? And I was like, let's do it. Let's see what happens. So then I went on the official Fortnite English broadcast. And then, you know, I was from there, it just kind of kept going. So just because I said yes to that one random email where I originally wanted to say no to, it opened up so many more doors and opportunities, which is like one of the main parts of who I am now. So I thought that was pretty cool.
For sure. Well, I think that's really cool that you was able to you know, take the risk, right? Jump into an opportunity, try something new. And even if you maybe felt like you didn't know what the skill set required, but you recognize really quickly, like, dude, this is a type of craft that you could work at and improve over time. I want to leave the listeners with a little, I think, piece of information, because I get DMs very, very frequently. You'd be surprised how many people say that they're interested, and you probably get the same thing, Takata, trying to get into commentary. How do I become a caster? What's the best ways to do it? Because there's no traditional path. There's no easy way to get there. And my general piece of advice to those people and to you guys listening is, bro, Fortnite's very particular and cool in the sense that there's a replay client. First of all, you could go in at technically any time and go work on what it is like to be a commentator. Play-by-play over games, learn how to, you know, break down moments, find moments to analyze, and record those moments and then put them out somewhere. It doesn't matter where you really put them out. You just got to have the heart to go throw them out to the world. In Fortnite in particular, there's also not a lot of competition when it comes down to the commentators Because everyone you see is basically the best of the best, because we're the only people pursuing it, and who you know, again, have the I guess interest and in the hunger to pursue professional commentary and be good at it. So it just shows you how much more room there is too, right? There are plenty of smaller and you know, different opportunities in the collegiate and the school spaces and even small esports orgs that can use a commentator, but probably can't afford Takata or MDF or Shadow Wager, right? Like a top tier, because there are literal levels to this, and the amateur kind of commentary space or the starter space, there is just so much room there, I think, for people to get in, but you just got to go make the comment.
Right.
Fortnite, you could just straight me. You can even open a broadcast, mute us, commentate over, right? Like, it's that easy.
Yeah, you even have a clean feed without the commentators that you can commentate over. Like, it's already ready. Like, it's, you have it available. No, I'm on your boat. Like, literally, the easy answer to that is just do it. And it's not just commentary. I think anything is literally just do it, but it works that much better in the commentary world. I remember in the early days, Clay was like a big example. Nowadays, you have people like Lash who are constantly doing their own commentary, doing their own practice and analysis, even on current tournaments, current events, and posting it on Twitter. Make shorts of it on YouTube, post TikToks about it, Instagram reels, like just post it. And the people that need to see it will see it. And when they do, you know, you're on kind of their mind and they're like, oh, this dude's kind of consistent. Oh, he's still posting. He's still posting. Like, he's just doing it. And then eventually they're going to need a commentator for this. Like, someone's going to back down, something's going to happen, and they're going to have you on their mind because they keep seeing you posting on socials and, you know, commentating even their events on the clean feed, whether it be smaller third party ones or even major ones. And they'll be like, you know what, let's talk to this guy. Let's see if he wants to try working with someone. And then all you need is that foot in the door. And once you get it, you know, the opportunities will keep coming.
So I have a question for you both. This is like entering masterclass, okay? Get your brains, like, stretch your brains. It's about to add value to people. But I think something that Takata's story shows, and Monster, you're the same, is that at some point people have to make a delineation from competitive to creative, maybe even production. And a lot of people's stories, typically the typical journeys, they start as a comp player, is like typical. But then we see that people have branched out from that. Give some handles on how you made that decision and how people can make that decision, because it's not just about what are you good at, although I want you guys to talk about that. There's also that other weird factor of, is this sustainable to your joy? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, does it, you could be really cracked, but you know, we've seen players do it. You know, we've seen deals go down where you're like, why would that person ever walk away from that? But they're like, I'm just not happy, even though I'm good at it. So how have you guys kind of navigated those different journeys or seen people do it well, so that maybe someone can make that decision sooner or better?
Yeah. I guess I'll start it off here. So this is an interesting question. What came to mind is I've never given up something completely without already having tried the thing I want to get into. Now, Monster might have a different answer on this. I'm just going to talk about like personal experience and the way I've seen it, because I don't think it's necessarily the right answer either. It's just kind of what I've done. For example, when I went from pro play to content creator in 2019, I was the number one rated Spanish player on power rankings. So I was like doing pretty well in terms of competitive, but I was also like mixing in the content realm, and I kind of saw it like I wasn't at my peak, but it was definitely like getting enough numbers to kind of in my mind make the decision to go more into that route. So I went then from pro to content. And then when I was doing the content as well, you know, I got that commentary thing, the offer wasn't going to make me more money than I was doing commentary. It was more just like, I'll try it out. And then I tried the commentary, but I was still doing content. I was still making content. I was still doing my tournaments. I was doing everything, but I was also just kind of doing the commentary on the side. But then eventually it led to like the official Fortnite broadcasts. And I'm like, okay, now it's kind of like a bigger deal. So I put more time into content. But as I've kind of made these changes, I've kind of like experimented with them a little bit. And I've never completely given up what I did beforehand, until I kind of felt like the time was right, and then kind of continued doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and then I guess in summary too, what you're saying is, I mean, your curiosity helped lead you into trying new things, and ultimately figuring out if whether or not you'd like it. And then, you know, when the success comes out the tail end of it, that's always a bonus, right? That's going to be a motivating factor.
Mm-hmm.
For me, my decision in deciding, like, you know, is commentary worth pursuing, or, you know, at what moments did I recognize if this was something that I'd like to be a part of, it came down to, for me, it really just came down to the numbers. There was a couple of things that was at work here. You know, having the affinity to enjoy commentary and educational type of, you know, angle on content aside, right? Like, that's one reason to do it. But when you just look at the raw, like, numbers, like, as a Twitch streamer or as a YouTuber or a content creator, regardless of the platform, what are the things that you look out for? You want viewership, you want community interaction, you want to make money, and you want, like, you know, airtime. And when you're a professional player, you want prizing, you want to be shown on broadcasts, and you want to, you know, essentially be a part of something cool, right? So looking at those things, and I zoom out, I'm like, bro, the commentator route is like a cheat code. You get way more airtime. You're literally the entire show to some degree. You are getting a guaranteed paycheck. And, you know, you get to essentially build a brand and a community off of that something credible that is a skill set, right? That you could be proud of. That's all that together just made it for me a very clear decision that, oh yeah, there's a potential career outlet here, and you get all the benefits of being on camera and just getting a guaranteed paycheck. And I think that was what was most appealing to me at the time. And, you know, my bang for my buck at that moment as well, it was pretty good. Like, I get to, you know, in 4 hours, make a pretty substantial paycheck. And then if I really wanted to grind, I could go, you know, go live on Twitch. Like, nothing's going to ever stop me from, you know, opening up shop, basically, and just pressing that live button right afterwards. And Takata, you've been in that situation too. I've seen it firsthand where you're like, yo, peace, guys. I got it. I'm hitting the hotel room. I'm going live, right? Like, I got more to, you know what I'm saying? We're on the grind. But that, like, that's the momentum you get off of a broadcast too. Like, people, you know, now you have a sense of community. People want to come gather, maybe talk about stuff, and maybe talk about stuff more candidly too, right? There's just like, yeah, there's fun elements to both. But for me, it just live commentary, professional commentary, it checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
I think that actually. I like that.
Yeah. I think, you know, the thing I hope people don't miss in either of y'all's answers is finding your sweet spot does not mitigate the difficulty. It just maximizes the benefits. And I think that there's a lot of young guns or even just people who are trying to make a transition from a day job or whatever that are just hoping for the easy route. But I hope what they didn't hear and what y'all were saying is that somehow the optimized path was less painful. It's just more sustainable in the end.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of sacrifice that comes into professional commentary. And we could probably save this for a V2 episode with Takata, where we go into the drawbacks of giving up your community that you spent years building. Because when, again, you're having a weekend off or you're flying around, you're traveling, there are stressors involved with watching your viewer count go down, your subscriber count go down, like your foundation feel like it's like, you know, I'll use an analogy. You're standing on the beach and you know when the wave and the water comes in and you can feel the sand getting pulled from underneath your feet. That is literally what it feels like. Your soul getting sucked out and you could physically feel the grains just get washed away by the water. That's what happens when you don't show up to go live on Twitch and you see your viewer count go down and your subscribers drop, and it gives you a sick to your stomach feeling. And it's very hard, and I commend any streamer who's willing and able to do more than just stream, whether it's build a business, whether it's get into broadcast, whether it's, you know, whatever, be a dad at home. All those additional sacrifices you make that give up the foundation of the thing you spend hours, we're talking 8 hours, 12 hours, 16-hour days to build up, to trade that off is not an easy decision at all. And Takata, I know, you know, I'm spitting facts right now because
100%.
It like, sucks, dude.
Like, you know what it's like. And yes. I feel like this industry as well, it's almost, we can talk about so many things in this realm, right? But like being a creator in any industry as well, you obviously have a lot of eyes on you. You have a lot of pressure, but you also have that community and it's a lot of people. And, you know, some of those people, you might get messages that you like really help them out. through hard times, and you're kind of like almost one of their, you know, support systems in their life. So it's like, there's also like a lot of pressure on your shoulders. And like you said, if you're traveling for commentary when we're in Copenhagen for 3 months, you know, and we not kind of at home in our own setup, it can be like difficult. And then you have that stress, you know, like I couldn't be live right now. I could be live. And it's like this whole thing, but it's also affects your mental a lot. So you have to be strong in that sense and also kind of learn how to, you know, do things to support that. And that's like a whole other thing. But
yeah, we should talk about that. We do love talking about that. We have, not that we're mental health professionals, but we do enjoy on this program to touch on some of those other elements of what allows someone to be successful, because no one is successful by ignoring the mental, the emotional, you know, all of those things. We gotta run a V2 back eventually, Takata. It's been so great having you,
100%.
Bro. Like I love the episodes, you know, like, you know, when Monster and I, we're talking about, you know, upcoming events, you know, we're very much in it, and we're like, what do we say? What don't we say? And like, you know, current events and all that. These I love because I feel like I get to benefit. I'm like, I'm getting a podcast right now. Like I take notes in my phone. On God, I was like, yo, my final piece, just being inspired by this conversation, is just encouraging everyone, man, just go get it while you can, because tomorrow's not promised. And life, the longer life goes, the more potentially complicated it gets with family and other obligations. And Takata, I think you're so inspiring to just, there's a lot of reasons you could have made excuses, but I think you're a great example of striking while the iron is hot and just going ahead and getting it. And I hope some people are listening to this and like, they just realize, man, I just gotta rip it. I gotta send it.
I love that.
Yeah. So as we're starting to gear up right here, I think this is an excellent point to start winding down. For those of you guys listening at home, you know, there is a lot that goes into this, and I hope that these interviews help you all kind of see the reality, right, of being a creator. And it's not all, you know, what the Twitter timeline looks like, you know, the highlights. There is a lot of sacrifice and effort that goes into it. And with that, this is the perfect time to ask Takata, if you could speak back to yourself when you began your career in gaming, you know, what would you tell yourself as a young man essentially jumping into the career of esports and this entire roadmap of life you jumped into?
I would tell myself to make a Tilted Zone Wars map in creative. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. That's a very good question. Now, I was thinking, you know, I think about this. The thing is, I kind of live by this saying that everything happens for a reason, and I haven't done anything near perfectly to get to where I am today, but failures are what help you grow, right? Those challenges are what you learn from. But if I did have to say something, it's something you actually mentioned earlier on regarding not doing everything yourself and being as efficient as possible. Now, when I was doing, you know, when I was starting to grow and I was making content and I was competing and I was in school and I was having my internship still and everything, I was doing it all myself. Like even my taxes, I didn't hire a CPA. I was like, nah, I'm learning how to expense my meals that I eat on my live stream and the clothes I use for my broadcast. You know, I'm going to learn all about these business expenses. I'm going to do my own taxes. I'm going to do everything. But I had difficulty trusting people. You have to learn to be able to trust people in the sense that I didn't find an editor for way too long. I didn't get a designer for way too long because I didn't think they'd be able to do the same work that I'd been doing. And I was scared that it would kind of make everything fall down. But also you have to kind of like, it's like this new skill you have to unlock in terms of kind of like hiring people and being a mentor in a sense to show them of what you kind of want in terms of content. And it's like this whole thing that you have to get into. So the one thing I would have liked to change is kind of start doing that sooner. And expand kind of like my team of people that helped grow my brand as a whole sooner, as it's definitely important, not just for efficiency and getting things done quicker and growing, or I guess scaling more, but also it just puts a lot of the pressure kind of off your back as well, as you're doing like everything at once and the stress that comes to that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think there's a level of internal fear and also ego, right? That you have, like, no one can make my content the way I make it, because that's our inner creator. kind of speaking like how could this editor do this thing? But more importantly, if they don't do it up to the level and standards that I've done it, I've seen what I've been able to get to. You don't want to lose it. But yeah, your feedback is noted and heard. I think for sure, learning how to trust, how to mentor, and having the patience to allow, you know, maybe those people to get up to that standard. John knows very well that I think I've learned how to be patient, even with John, right? When it comes down to socials and Twitter, like just, you know, going through the motions, like, John, this is the thing I'm looking for, right? Like, learn how to find that thing, right? Or structure the tweet like this, etc. For sure. That's a wonderful.
That's a whole nother episode too. I mean, I'm right.
That is
in the middle
a whole
too.
Other episode.
Because you weigh out like, you know, maybe paying less, but like getting to develop people from the ground up, or paying more, but then you have less control because you're paying an agency, scaling up. Man, I feel like we already scripted episode two in the future. So this is awesome.
For sure. Well, Takata, listen, let the people at home know where they can find you, my boy. Yeah, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's at Takata on all socials, except for Instagram, at Takata TV. Gotta get Meta to change that one for
me. They are ruthless.
As always, you can send all your complaints to me at the49podcast@gmail.com or at MonsterDFace on socials. John, as usual, let the people at home know where they can find you, man.
Yeah, hit me up on X, Twitter, John W. Key Rush. Hit us up on Prac. Stay tuned with everything that we got going on. We're building a lot of really exciting things in esports production, Discord, community building, marketing in the Scholastic space. A lot of stuff people haven't seen yet, but do not be mistaken. The dragon is not sleeping. Stay tuned.
As always, John, I want you to write the new sign off because I forgot the tagline, but I'm giving you a second so that you can remind me. We do have a new way I want to sign these off. But yeah, guys, thank you guys so very much for listening to this one. If you're hunting for the video version, hopefully by the time we air this episode, you know, it won't be too long afterwards where we'll have the video content out. We are backed up from Destiny Jesus, Zenko, Immature Gamer, and now Takata, and the features are going to continue to roll out. Stay tuned for a tweet from me as I start to prepare what would be the next set of guests. And there's no clickbait here, just value. Peace, y'all.